Global Health Radio, take it from us on Planet FM, and I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Curran. And our radio show is brought to you and funded by Framework Trust, of course, in just over a month. That's going to be Ember Trust from July the 1st. Framework and Connect Supporting Recovery are merging to establish Ember. And we're all going to enjoy a night out, I think, in mid-June to celebrate that merger. Now, a cartoon on Facebook has stimulated today's show. It showed people at a chemist given a couple of choices. One was to queue up exclusively for pharmaceutical pills. The other was to queue up for lifestyle choices. And not surprisingly, the cartoon showed everybody queued up at the booth offering the medication. Probably that seemed to be the magic pill queue, and you don't have to put too much effort in just taking the pills. But our guest today, Richard Stevens, is adamant that the cartoon reflects old school thinking, and I certainly agree with him. Richard, who is studying a Master's in Health Sciences at Massey University, majoring in psychology, is a champion for a combination of both medications and lifestyle choices. I'll let Richard tell listeners about his diagnoses, but it's fair to say they are challenging. Yet Richard believes strongly in his lifestyle choices to stay well. Well, here's Richard to tell us how he manages his mental health. Welcome, Richard, to take it from us. You're in the lower part of the North Island somewhere?
Yes, I'm in Wellington, and it's great to be with you today.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for your time. So you're actually in Wellington, although you're studying at Massey. Do they have a campus in Wellington?
Yeah, they have a small campus. However, my master's is being done by distance learning, so doing it extramurally.
Is that challenging?
Can be challenging. Going up, you go up to block courses in Auckland or Palmerston North. Working late at night, doing study, you don't have the support of your fellow students around you. But we do have a lot of support via our own Facebook pages and groups.
Oh, okay. So they have a Facebook sort of support group for people studying extramurally?
Yep, and we have established our own ones from block courses and our own course groups as well.
Yeah, well, congratulations on working towards a Master's in Health Sciences, majoring in psychology. I'm assuming that you're sort of perhaps in your 40s, Richard, so it's always challenging to pick up further education, you know, at that age.
Yeah, it can be. I'm mid-30s now. I decided to go back because I firmly believe in a lot of the experience I've had has highlighted some of the gaps in the system.
Right.
Around accessing mental health, and this just allowed me some more tools and some backing to be able to challenge some of those gaps that can be found.
Yeah, what would you describe as some of those gaps in the mental health system?
One of the biggest ones is access, being able to get into systems around being able to be supported before you have your relapse or become unwell. So having systems at the top of the cliff and putting a fence in place as opposed to having systems at the bottom when you fall apart, and that's where some of these lifestyle options can come in, and medications can also come into that as well.
So I guess by having a fence at the top of the cliff or the ambulance at the top of the cliff, you can, you know, it gives us an opportunity to stay in the community rather than ending up in some sort of crisis or respite option.
Totally. Some of the work I've done has been around peer support with people who were acute and were looking at heading to potentially respite or ending up on a psychiatric ward. And we worked on things like recovery planning, mindfulness, yoga, exercise. And quite a lot of the time we were able to keep people in the community with a short burst of support instead of having them end up in a respite facility or the ward, which can be very expensive if we're looking at a cost side of things. But in terms of their own mental well-being, sometimes going into a respite facility can be traumatic, and especially going into psychiatric wards. I know they do, the nurses and the staff there try to do their best, but they're not conducive to a good recovery.
So in your own experience, have you had to sort of call on crisis mental health services to help you in the past?
Several times I have myself. I live with bipolar, chronic anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder from various things in my life, and have been in and out of psychiatric care. Unfortunately, I have experienced seclusion and high-level psychiatric care myself.
And that experience, how would you describe that experience, particularly being put into seclusion?
Varying. Sometimes I've been lucky and had a supportive psychiatrist and people around me. At times I also have experienced not being listened to, not being believed. I tried to get help at one stage because I was aware I was becoming unwell, and I was, quote-unquote, not unwilling enough to receive support. And that's where I ended up in seclusion myself. And honestly, it is not something I would wish upon anyone, is experiencing seclusion.
I mean, would you feel happy about detailing that? Because we did refer to seclusion when we did an analysis the other day of the Director of Mental Health and Addictions annual report, where seclusion, unfortunately, is still, a high priority issue in the treatment of mental health and addiction. What sort of warning did you have that you were going to be put into seclusion or solitary confinement?
I had no warning whatsoever. It was basically I became so unwell and they just put me straight in there following a major relapse. And I spent at one period about 6 weeks in there.
No,
and this was 23 hours a day locked down by myself.
Well, what, for 6 weeks?
Yeah.
So how did you justify that in your own mind? They justify it, don't they, by saying that the patient is either unsafe to themselves, a risk to themselves, or a risk to other patients and staff. I mean, did you feel that you were as serious as that?
There were safety concerns when I had my relapse, and it was just going through the process of, you know, after my relapse and getting medication and that sort of thing stabilised. Unfortunately, it also coincided with public holidays and people just not being available or following processes.
So the suggestion there is that it was public holidays, there were fewer staff on, and it was convenient to put you in seclusion in order to overcome those staff shortages.
Part of it, yes.
Right. So given those diagnoses, and thank you for sharing those diagnoses, you're quite courageous, I would suggest, in adopting lifestyle options as part of your therapy and part of your treatment and part of your recovery.
It helps me on a day-to-day basis. As you alluded to, I use a combination of pharmaceuticals and lifestyle. I love doing my studying, my policy work and stuff like that. In the past, I've been on medications that have left me drowsy and unable to think clearly and impaired my cognitive abilities. What I have now is a range of medications that give me a stable base to be able to do other activities like my study, work, mountain biking, tramping, cross stitch, and it just gives me a bit of a whole more holistic and rounded output.
So did getting to that point with your medication, did it take quite a bit of advocating for yourself, speaking up for yourself, describing the side effects that you were experiencing?
Very much so. I've been lucky more recently, having had a couple of supportive psychiatrists, also having a couple of really good primary GPs along the way who have being open to hearing my point of view and taking the idea that, hey, I know what's going on a little bit more than they do, and actually being willing to listen when I've said, hey, this medication is doing this to me. Is there another option we can look at?
So that's a hugely positive statement, really, isn't it, that you've experienced psychiatrists and primary GPs who are primary health professionals who have been prepared to listen. And in listening, what's the result been, Richard?
I've been able to be more open with them and feel like I can actually talk to them about some of this stuff. Whereas if you've got a psychiatrist who is more old school, say the 1980s, 1990s medical model, which is just here's the pills, I'm the psychiatrist, you're the patient, go away kind of thing, you don't have that relationship. I went to see my GP literally last week just for a repeat of my script and a checkup. And the first thing he asked me about was not actually my mental health. He asked what bike rides I'd been out on recently. Oh, he knows I do a lot of cycling.
Well, that's fabulous, isn't it? Well, let's talk a little bit more about those bike rides and some of the other lifestyle options. We'll just take a break here, Richard, and I'll ask Declan to play our first track on Take It From Us.
Yeah, I just wanted to add in there that, yeah, what Richard's saying, very important that I've got a psychiatrist who's become a friend as well, and I've also got a GP who's very supportive. So I think that having that trust and having that connection beyond that medical element I think is vital, because it allows you to open up and be honest with them without any criticism and that sort of thing. So yeah, that's good. Anyway, we'll pop you on hold. The song that I'm going to be introducing now is, because it's New Zealand Music Week, I thought we would have a song from Hello Sailor. They're a group that were formed in 1975 and they formally disbanded in 1980 after only two albums. They sporadically reunited, recording a further four albums, albums, and were performing numerous live tours and appearances. In 2005, they were chosen for title music for the TV series Outrageous Fortune. In 2015, the band were planning their 40th anniversary tour. Unfortunately, one of their lead guys, Brazier, can't remember his first name, I didn't write it down.
Ryan Brazier.
Yeah. He died in 2015, and so the tour was postponed and they ended shortly thereafter. And one of their guys, I think, also passed in 2013. So, bit of a pity. But here's the song, Gutter Black. You're listening to Take It From Us, Mental Health Radio, broadcasting on Planet FM 104.6 every Tuesday from 12:30 through to 1:30.
From us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And that particular song there, I had our station manager, Christine Poppy, head in, so that's for you. So keep your working out there. That was, of course, Gutter Black by Hello Sailor.
And Hello Sailor, I think, reunited for Radio Hauraki's 40th birthday. They played at the what was then the Old Majestic, and they were an absolute blast. They had the place absolutely rocking. So, Hello Sailor.
Funny you should say that, because while I was doing some research on the song, it said they didn't really take off in America, and they went back to Australia and didn't really take off either. It was like a drugs and hoo-ha scene and that, and everything went sort of pretty flat. I think they split from there and then came back again a bit later.
Yeah, well, we're talking today to Richard Stevens about the whole issue of medication versus lifestyle choices, and I have said that Richard pursues a combination of both, but we were going to ask him about those lifestyle changes, but I think we'll just step back one step and ask when Richard began working in mental health. You're there, Richard?
Yep, I am still here. Goes back to my early days in university in 2005. I was doing political science and history at Canterbury University and got involved in party politics, and at the same time the psychiatric youth facility in Hamner was being closed. It was the last facility for child and youth, and we had a lot of concerns about that. So I was involved in advocating on trying to keep some aspects of it open and ensuring that there were other supports available for youth in the community as well. Later on, I have sat on health and health policy committees. I've done some policy work in health and disability, and I've also later on gone to do peer support and peer advocacy with two organisations in Wellington supporting people in the community.
Just taking you back to the Hanmer situation, of course I'm from Christchurch and I went to Canterbury University as well, but Hanmer had a special facility for alcoholics, I think. Was that converted into a facility for young or youth with mental health challenges?
That was part of the facility. One of the concerns we had at the time was it was the only government-run youth facility for drug and alcohol. After that facility was closed, what was happening was youth were being put into programs alongside adults, which created a lot of concerns, created some issues around safety and about some of the topics that did come up within the program.
So you're not only an advocate for mental health, but you've worked in mental health. I mean, was that work based on your own personal experiences?
I sort of got pushed into that sort of role because of my lived experience, and that had been useful in walking alongside others who were just starting their recovery journey, working as a peer. You do call on some of your own experiences. Everyone's experience is different, but you can relate a little bit more than someone who hasn't walked that journey. And I know a lot of the people I supported found it quite beneficial.
So that's what we call peer support, isn't it? Are you an advocate of peer support, Richard?
I'm a huge advocate of peer support, and it was positive to see in the mental health inquiry that was released earlier this year that they are calling on more funding and more peer support. Because having someone walk alongside you who has some understanding of what it's like to live with mental distress just makes you feel slightly less alone.
And I think early in the interview you talked about advising some of your peers, some of the people that you were supporting with some of these alternative therapies. I think you mentioned yoga, meditation, mindfulness. So it sounds as though these are things that you've practiced yourself and were able to sell, if you like, or promote the values of those alternative therapies.
Yes, the program I worked with where we did a lot of that was an acute day program, which was a 2 to 4 week short intervention. And we looked at a number of things that the person may be able to incorporate into their life that may be able to help them through the crisis, and sort of gave them a bit of a taste on different things. So if they wanted to try a mindfulness program, we had that a couple of times a day. If they wanted to learn a bit more about anxiety management, I led a workshop on what anxiety is, you know, discussing that actually anxiety can be beneficial, but the way it's been working with us, it's got out of control, and just giving them some basic information, and actually being able to say, hey, look, I have tried some of this stuff myself and I use it, was beneficial to them, because, you know, they've got someone who's walked the walk and is now also talking the talk.
Well, I think it gives us great credibility when we can, you know, promote something as an alternative therapy which we have tried ourselves and which we have found beneficial to our well-being.
Yeah, totally.
So when did you begin to recognise these benefits of lifestyle, some of the things that we're sort of specifically talking about there to support your mental well-being?
It would have been in my 20s. I was diagnosed when I was 13. Back then, it was still very medical model, so it was very much take the medication and come back if it's not working and we'll try something else. While I was at uni, I got involved in a support group, and they had a support group meeting every couple of weeks, and social activities. And at that stage, there was a whole slow movement towards lifestyle aspects as well. So looking at what they call a psychosocial model of health, looking at social factors of illness as well.
So was this a recognition by the administration of Canterbury University that there was a need for support group and a need to recognise that mental health can be, I guess, somewhat jeopardised by, I don't know, intensive study, you might say?
The support group I went to was outside of Canterbury University. I did have counselling at Canterbury University through the student services a couple of times when I needed it, and I also had support actually from one of my lecturers when I was struggling with my health and was getting close to a deadline on a major assignment, and he factored that in and gave me a couple of extra weeks. I do understand now Canterbury University have a very strong mental health program,
right?
Which has been recently developed, especially after the earthquakes down there.
So, you know, university study, how did that impact your mental health?
Well, it's kind of ironic. I find study therapeutic, and for me, it's a bit of a hobby.
Right.
It allows me to focus and provide structure to my day. But yes, at times it can be overly demanding when you have three or four assignments due or you're struggling with a certain assignment. So being able at university just fall back on my peers, the people I was studying with. As I said, I had one time when I was really bad, I had a chat to my lecturer. I actually asked him for a week's extension. He came back and said, well, what's going on? And gave me a 2-week extension instead.
Right. But of course, you're now in a new round of study, aren't you? This sounds as though it was say 10 or more years ago.
Early 2000s was my study at Canterbury.
Right. So, are you also experiencing some challenges as you work through doing your Masters in Health Sciences at Massey?
Yes, I have. Studying psychology and looking at aspects of mental health or just some of the topics under psychology, it can be triggering, especially when I come across things which are a bit close to the bone for me.
Right.
But I have some good friends that I can fall back on and talk to. I've learnt to take a break every now and then. I've got a really good counsellor who I can debrief with. But I recently was on a series of block courses up in Auckland for my master's, and I was able to share some very interesting insights with some of the students up there who haven't either had experience with mental health or working in the mental health sector. So being able to share those with them was beneficial as well.
Beneficial to both them and to you?
I do find it beneficial myself sometimes. But they actually got a lot from it, and I do still get the odd Facebook message question from them, just trying to connect the theory or ideas right. to real-world situations.
Yeah. Well, let's just take a look at some of these lifestyle choices. You've certainly mentioned this is mountain biking, is it, or mountain biking and cycling?
Yeah, mountain biking, road riding. I've just finished the BMX season, and in 2 weeks I start cyclocross season as well.
So you're a BMX competitor, are you?
Yeah, a friend of mine got me into that. Partway through last year, he's had to give up BMX because he's done his knees in, and suggested I take over his BMX bike, and got involved with the local club and have found it quite enjoyable.
Right, so, you know, it takes a little bit of courage to go along to a new club and get involved in a new sport. How did you find that?
Not too bad. Rod, my friend, was there with the club the first few days because he's got other family that raced in the club. And the guys that I was racing against were very good. They gave me some tips and pointers, suggestions on setting up the bike. The simple things like even tyre pressures can make a big difference.
Yeah.
I've suggested a new set of tyres and just given me advice on things like getting the best out of the starting gate.
Right.
And how to approach some of the corners.
Yeah, well, and, you know, in competition, you get anxious before you take off from those starting gates?
I tend not to because I'm there just to compete more against myself and have a bit of fun.
Right.
The guys I'm up against, a number of them are New Zealand-ranked riders. So I'm definitely not going to be able to beat them. But it's more about getting out and having some fun. And there's been a couple of times where I've sort of hummed and hard where I haven't been 100%. And just didn't feel like going, but it's like, I've got this race on, I've already committed, I've paid my race fees, I'm going to go out, and I end up having an awesome time.
What's your best result?
I did a series of races over 5 events, and over that series, I came 5th out of a total of 7 races.
Yeah, well, well done. Well, I'd like to take another music break, Richard. I'm not sure what Declan has got for us, but it is Music Month, New Zealand Music Month, Declan. So you've got another track, have you?
I've been puddling and playing about. I've decided I'm going to put one in the middle here that isn't. It's basically a song that from Casey and JoJo. It's called All My Life, and apparently JoJo penned it as a tribute to his 7-year-old daughter, Kayla. And it comes off the album Love Always, which reached the US top 10. 10 went multi-platinum, spawning three Hot 100 charting singles, including this one, in April 1998. You will take it from us, Mental Health Radio, and this is Casey and JoJo with All My Life.
From us on 104.6 Planet FM.
And I'm host Sheldon Brown with technician Declan Karen, who's choosing the music today. And we're talking today to Richard Stevens, who is a mental health advocate, worker in peer support. He's currently studying a Master's in Health Sciences at Massey University, majoring in psychology. And Richard responded on Facebook to a cartoon which stimulated today's show. And he's a champion of relying on medication as well as lifestyle options. Which of those two, Richard, do you think are most important for your own personal well-being?
It's very hard to make a choice between the two. The way I always explain it is that the pharmaceutical medications provide me a stable base, make my depression manageable and assist with my anxiety. And by having that stable base, it means I can go out socially, I can go for a ride and that sort of thing. And I do notice if I haven't been out and done exercise or gone for a ride for a few days that my anxiety symptoms do actually increase a bit. So I think they're actually both quite closely linked to each other.
So it's a really important sort of complement or complementary strategy, really, therapy.
Very much so, very much so. And that's, for me, that's how I find it useful. But I do acknowledge that others, you know, they may be able to differentiate that quite differently.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't asked you, you know, what the sort of, I suppose, the volume or the dosages for your psychiatric medication is. More importantly, I suppose, have you been able to reduce any of those or adapt them a little bit with the using lifestyle options as a complement?
I certainly have. I am on a high dose of antidepressants for my bipolar, and on a moderate dose of medication for anxiety and PTSD symptoms. What I tend to find is I also have the option of taking additional medication if my symptoms or presentations are playing up. So if my anxiety level is out of control, I become jittery, I become jumpy and easily startled and can't focus or concentrate, I have the option of taking medication for that. But I try not to do that too often, because part of the reasoning being I'm on what's known as benzodiazepines, which are highly addictive.
Right.
Where if I can take a break and go for a walk around the block or, you know, schedule in some bike riding, or if my mind's racing, stop and do some cross-stitch and sort of just slow things down a bit, then I don't feel the need to take that alternative or extra medication that I have available.
So what about meditation or adopting some mindfulness when you get into those states of high anxiety?
Music, it's focusing on music. Cross-stitch, I've got this really awesome large project I'm working on, and it's, as one of my therapists said, cross-stitch is very mindful because all you're doing is focusing on basically the pattern and the work you're doing at the time. So you're not having your mind run off on a thousand different things. You're just focusing. And, you know, there's a lot of people that say cycling is very meditative, and I find that as well, because very quickly everything that was going on that was getting you anxious or creating your mind sort of just gets lost as you get into the rhythm of cycling and breathing. And then if you're getting into things like mountain biking, you're sort of just focusing on the bike, its position on the trail, your position on the bike, and also setting yourself up for the next couple of corners or the next obstacle on the track.
So do you do any mountain bike racing or competing?
Again, I do a few events. Again, more for the social factor, the fun factor, and challenging myself. So I've done a couple of endurance races in Wellington, with a friend of mine, including the Wainui Worlds, which is a 6-hour endurance race based in Wainui Amata. And I have done several downhill enduros. Again, that was more to test me and my bike and have a bit of fun. And again, getting to know the local mountain bike community.
Yeah, well, I mean, some of that is sounds quite serious in terms of mountain biking, maybe competing, taking on 6-hour events. I mean, that's slightly different to, say, going, well, the equivalent in Auckland would be going up to Woodhill Forest, perhaps taking your bike on your own and trying a few new trails and not risking your life sort of style.
I do a bit of that as well. I went out a couple of days ago for a quick ride. I'm lucky I live near the Hutt River, and there's a very nice stretch of cycle path all along the Hutt River. It goes from Petone right up, you can almost get up to Kapiti.
Wow.
And, you know, just something nice and light and low key. We're very lucky in Wellington. We have 4 or 5 mountain bike parks, which are managed and built by volunteers. Mm. And I'm involved in part of that. And it's a matter of just chucking your bike on the back and heading out to one of the trails. Quite often, if I go with a friend, it's go or a ride and then a beer afterwards. And some of the people I go tramping with have expressed an interest in doing more rides. Mm. So I've been slowly introducing them to some of the tracks as well.
So you're taking an initiative and introducing them to a new adventure, if you like, or a new pursuit.
Yeah, I am. They're people I know, and I enjoy sharing my skills and knowledge. And we did a ride recently that was from Porirua up to Kapiti Coast. And a lot of people just hadn't ever done it or thought of it or even knew about the track.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a good day out and I enjoyed it.
So does that take you, like, through the Rumatakas or...?
It goes right along the coastline. The Rumatakas are further inland, a cycle park in there. And I'm actually in the process of preparing. They've got a 3-day cycle ride you can do that goes from Petone up the Hutt River over the Rumataka summit and comes out on the other side in Wainui itself.
Right. Oh, well, one of the coincidences of us agreeing to do this interview was an article which I read, I think, after I had sort of made contact with you, and it had the headline, "Feel free to take lifestyle medicine, but if you do, I'll see you on my operating table," which seemed to be a fairly belligerent sort of headline and undermining the benefits of lifestyle medicine. This was the view of a doctor. Would you like to sort of walk us through some of the opinions that this particular doctor, I think Dr. Nikki Stamp, who is a cardiothoracic surgeon, would you like to just give us a couple of insights as to her attitudes towards lifestyle medicine?
Yeah, that was a really interesting article, and I saw it that morning too. And it's based on a case study of a person who presented to her. He's 55 years old and was diagnosed with high blood pressure, high cholesterol, and the individual decided that instead of taking quote-unquote nasty medicine, this person changed or chose to choose lifestyle changes instead only, and is now having to have an operation due to heart issues. And this is where this balance comes in. I know there are some people in the mental health community, and I myself have been attacked, who are very anti-pharmaceutical medication and turn their back on it and actually have, I guess it's come from this big pharma issue of the 80s and 90s, and choose a more holistic approach to management. I think it's about trying to find a balance between the two. There's, my view is, you know, there has been over-treatment in terms of medical treatment in the past. If you look at the old style of treatment for depression was straight on to medications, whereas now it's the best practice is a few sessions of counselling first and some problem-solving tools and maybe bringing in medication later or at the same time. So a lot of people now have turned their back on common or standard medicine to focus on, you know, just lifestyle things. And I think the pendulum has got a little bit out of balance at times.
Well, this cardiothoracic surgeon says about that particular case of Robert, the 55-year-old who seemed to have suffered a serious heart attack, it says that he went for the attractive pill-free route when the less attractive but more efficacious medications may have stopped him meeting me for open heart surgery. So basically the cardiothoracic surgeon is saying, well, he went for this attractive pill-free route, but it didn't keep him off the operating table or from heart surgery. I mean, I know this is a physical ailment, but you've made, I think, some very important points around the treatment of depression. I'm not sure these days that we wouldn't be prescribed antidepressants straight up if we went into our GP and said, well, I'm anxious and feeling sad and depressed. I'm not sure that we would necessarily get away without the pills, though.
It depends on your GP and how progressive they are. What we have at the moment is a changing of the guard. So a change, or going back to political science, change takes three generations. So you've got the generation where change takes place, a second generation where they get the new system of how things are done, but they still have the older generation saying, back in my day, this is how it was done. And it's that third generation where you get that whole new split. And, you know, they're away from the old system. So we still have a lot of doctors and psychiatrists who operated under the biomedical model of the 70s and 80s, even early 90s, who are still got a lot of influence, and I've actually seen that when supporting people. However, I am aware too of notices that have come out and research that has come out and been sent to GPs and clinicians advising that, you know, the use of benefit and counselling is more beneficial than just medication alone.
Right. Well, know, I'll pass on a little experience that I had when I was discharged. The last time I was discharged, the psychiatrist, I think he said that taking the medication was so important, particularly the antidepressant medication was so important, particularly when you get to an age that I'm at, because the onset of dementia was much more likely if you didn't take the pills. Now, I'm not sure what your response to that is, but I was somewhat horrified.
I'm horrified myself. And a little bit concerned, to be honest. I have a lot of friends who do, because I've worked in mental health and I've lived with mental health, who have come to me for advice on where to go. And I've actually had a lot who have, when I've suggested they go to their GP, been offered like 10 free sessions through their primary health provider first. Locally, the community mental health team, they run workshops on mindfulness and resilience training and that sort of thing. So they are starting to acknowledge the role that lifestyle options have, and that's not just all medication. Unfortunately, as I said, you know, and agree that there are still some who are dinosaurs.
Right.
And I have struck them myself, and actually there is a GP at my health practice I use who I will not see.
Right, yeah.
Basically because he belonged in the Stone Age.
Yeah, well, I mean, in defence of that discharge, there was also a psychologist there who urged me to do 15 minutes of deep breathing immediately I went to bed, and 15 minutes of breathing before I got out of bed in the morning. And I've certainly found that very useful. My listening to a meditative CD, a 30-minute meditative CD, I find really re-energizes me as well. So breathing is something that is important to you, Richard?
Very much so. I do some deep breathing exercises as well. And if I'm in a situation that I can't get myself out of, like a social situation or a work situation, I do a small mindfulness exercise where I just actually focus on my breathing, and that's the only thing I'm focusing on.
Right, well, that's a wonderful place to leave our interview today. We've only got about a few seconds left, I think. So Declan is indicating that I've got to cut it pretty
I'm
quickly.
Flapping my wings with great delight. Yeah,
so
no.
Thank you very much, Richard, for your contribution to Take It From Us.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed talking with you today.
Great. And you can hear that interview on www.planetaudio.org.nz/takeitfromus within 5 minutes of us finishing the show. And we will be editing that show as well to upload onto our Take It From Us website on the Framework web.
And we're out of here. Have a good week. We will see you next week. Same place, same time.
Thank you for listening.